Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
All right, welcome everybody to another episode of Tennis Channel Inside In on the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. Mitch Michaels from the Santa Monica Studios. Delighted as always to recap the Australian Open, discuss major champions, and again, listen to us on all your platforms. Subscribe on Apple, Spotify, YouTube for the video. Real treat as always. Second time on the show, so now he's an official reoccurring guest. One of the most exciting, energetic, and professional broadcasters in the game of tennis. And this South African man is fresh off calling another major, the exceptional, exciting Australian Open. Robbie Koenig, welcome back to Tennis Channel Inside In. It's good to catch up with you.
It is, Mitch. It was a fantastic month down there. Did the United Cup. Had a week off. Did some fly fishing in between, actually. Okay. Shipped over to New Zealand for a couple of days. So recharged my batteries for the AO. So I went in there all guns blazing. And what a great fortnight it was. I know you were keeping an eye on things. So, I mean, we could spend 2 or 3 hours on the show easily and still not get done.
Oh, we certainly could. We're going to try to cram all we can in to this discussion here. But I have to start with this, Robbie, because you've been exceptionally generous with your time at all times. But, you know, we're going to pull the curtain back for the people listening and watching. We were going to do this a day before, and you said, hey, would you mind if I pushed it a day? And I'm like, yeah, sure, no problem. You gave me like the best reason anyone's given to delay it. You were going to watch cricket with a former world number one and three-time champ. So Gustavo Kuerten was in South Africa, and you guys went to the cricket match. I'll start with that. I feel honored. Like, being bumped by him is an honor to me.
he's such a rock star. He got in touch with us a couple of months ago, said he was coming out to South Africa and he wanted some recommendations on where to go and what to do. He's always been a big surfer. So yeah. Obviously Durban, where I'm from, is a real surfing hotspot. He's heading off to Cape Town today. It just so happens that both of my cousins that are brothers, the one's a doctor here, surfs every morning of his life. So that was an easy fix. And his other brother who lives in Cape Town will take Guga out on a couple of occasions going surfing there. Yeah, and the cricket competition that's going on now is quite a big thing. He had some of the players staying in his hotel. And he said, hey, Robbie, you're going to go to the cricket? And I said, why not? Let's do it, man. And we caught up at the cricket. I just got in from Melbourne. And he's the kind of guy who's up for everything. Yeah. And actually, last week, he was with my former doubles partner, John Lafney-Diaga.
Oh, yeah.
Up at King's Camp there, checking out some of the wildlife, which blew him out of the water. So far, he's had a good stay. And the guy never changes, man. He's just a bundle of energy, just loves life. What an awesome family, Mitch. They had a full crew with him, not only his two kids, but they've got the nephews as well with them. I think there were 5 kids in total. So him and his wife, you know, every 10 minutes they're counting to make sure they've got 5 chickens with them all the time. Yeah. So it was quite funny, but great to catch up with Guga. Shared a lot of stories from when we first met, actually in a warm-up event right before Miami.
Yeah.
Came across this guy playing on a hard courts down there in Marathon, Key West. And it's funny, the one thing that struck me about him wasn't the ground strokes, but the serve. Couldn't believe this long, lanky dude from South America, because they traditionally didn't have big servers, could hit the serve so big. I played him some dubs back then, and it was great. You reminisce about the old days, the new days, now that we've got kids and we've all moved on. So it's so nice to be able to host him when he's in your own backyard. And that tennis fraternity is tight, eh? It's fantastic, man. It really is.
It's good to hear about Guga, just such a positive guy out there, and happy that he's still staying in touch with his tennis community. Getting back, Robbie, to the Australian Open, I started with this. There's a lot of notes. We're going to get to Sinner and Sabalenka winning the titles, but it's another example of you've been within the game of tennis for several decades now, too many to count, but just when you think you've kind of seen it all or different storylines, and you could say, well, I've seen this before. We kind of know how this is going to go. It's another example. This Australian Open was another example that you haven't seen at all, and there's new and exciting and unpredictable ways championship-level tennis could play out.
You know, I might have said it on a couple of occasions on your show. That's why sport's the best form of reality TV. And in a mono-mono situation, the storylines is just so many of them. Again, we had late finishes. We had day sessions that were insanely long. Matchups. I mean, some of the first round matchups that we had, how good were some of those? Dominic Thiem and Felix Auger-Aliassime. I did that one. What a match that was. The woman, obviously from an American perspective, Coco doing as well as she did was a big story. The record turnout of fans that we had in Oz, and I actually said to you just before we came on air, we were talking about, you know, how good it was down there. And I was just going to say, the last two majors, I cannot recall ever seeing so many fans on site. It was the same at the US Open. I've never seen the ground so full, and same in Melbourne now. I mean, it was wall to wall. And you talk about a fan experience, hey, Mitch. They do a lot of things right there. You know, always looking to make it the best possible experience, more shaded area, more stuff going on away from the courts when you've got a bit of time and you want to watch some music concerts or food vendors that were just so darn good. You know, you could pick every single day. There were so many highlights. And, of course, a Sunday start. Let's not forget that. You know, every single day you could pick numerous storylines, which I guess in sport is what you want. And that's what makes these big events so good, right?
Certainly does. I would say to add to that, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder. The fact that we're coming out of the pandemic and people were just missing tennis and missing the big crowds. Again, hats off to Tennis Australia for the job they did putting on such a show. The people certainly liked it. It was an awesome start to the season.
Mitch, a quick one. I want to get your thoughts as well, because I was on the ground. What do you think about the crowd being allowed in on the even games? What was the feedback like, feeling in the States?
I'll give you my take, and I think it's pretty similar. I like it. I like it finding ways to make tennis more exciting to a point, and I don't think it was too egregious. I know, you know, anything new right in any sport in tennis is going to take maybe some adjusting, and you can't get people to agree. But if the players were on board and they knew that this is what was happening, then I don't see the issue. Like, it's even games, letting them come in isn't that big of a deal. I've also, Robbie, been on the other side of it maybe a little more than you, where I'm the spectator, and it's nice to have that opportunity to wait till a game is over, you're not interrupting play, and just let the players, let the fans return to their seats. So I think it was positive, and I think any way you can make this sport, I don't, move along a little bit, but also more exciting and you know, kind of increase engagement, I think it's a good thing.
Absolutely. Fan experience is everything. And I think coming off the back of the pandemic, as you mentioned, when the players were, you know, banging on about, you know, how sterile the environment was and they couldn't wait to have the fans back, I think a little bit of extra movement was no big deal at all. And it's refreshing.
Certainly agree with that. Got to talk about the men's champion, Jannik Sinner. First Grand Slam, second Italian man to win a major. Shout out to Adriano Panatta, though. I mean, we got to pay respect there. 1976 RG beat Borg along the way. Held the mantle for so long as the only man from his country to win a major, but Jannik Sinner enters the club. And Robbie, there's winning a major and there's winning a major. And he went through Novak Djokovic and Daniil Medvedev, coming from two sets down in that final. It's all to me about the process. And you heard it with his coach and his team and Darren Cahill and everybody that's worked with him along the way, including Ricardo Piatta, who, as you mentioned on Twitter, was very instrumental to his game. But where he's come in the last 18 months especially, but his whole career, it was building to a moment like this. He had the run of his life, Robbie. He's going to most likely build on it. But it's special what he showed and how he got incrementally better along the way, culminating in the first of maybe several major titles.
Three top five wins. Don't forget Rublev in the previous round as well, to go on to win your first major. So that is big time. And you are so right about a young kid who believes so much in the process and always looking to get better, always add to his game, even if it was at the expense of losing. And it's hard as a player, right? When you're losing and you keep coming in, or you try different things with a serve, but you stick at it. And that stickability can never be underestimated. And to have that growth mindset You have to surround yourself with the right people. And I think he's got a very strong team in place. Darren's been through changes with players where they've had to tinker with technique. So your ability to trust that process, the fact that he's been there and done it with, you know, the likes of Halep, Leighton at a younger age, Andre at a much older age, that gives him a, you know, so much experience as well that he can always give that confidence to Yannick to trust the process. Then you've got a young friend like Simone who's been with him since he switched from Riccardo Piatti. So I think the most important thing is to have a good team around you, so we see that. And secondly, how strong this guy is. He's so qualified from the neck up, man. It's unbelievable how calm he was. There were moments there, the tail end of the third set, when he was pretty close to getting broken, where you could see he was absolutely fuming. But he refused to let that get in the way of what he wanted to achieve. And I think for that, a lot of the credit goes to Riccardo Piatti, who in the early days, you know, he got him from the age of 14 till 2 years ago. So 14 to 20, probably six of the most crucial years in his development. Yeah. And he only played twice a week before he arrived at Riccardo, right?
Yeah.
So I think the foundation that Piatti laid was just immense. And I think these guys that have taken over since then, they've been able to polish him up, make some changes with the serve. And, you know, it's the perfect recipe now. And I can't applaud the guy enough. What an amazing young man. And just when we were worried about whether tennis will be in good hands, you know, post the big three era, we couldn't ask for a better ambassador, together with the likes of a Holger Rune or a Carlos Alcaraz especially. Right? Those two, they practiced together in the off season, didn't they? They spent the day together at the Ferrero Academy. They get on so well. There's a healthy rivalry there. Man, I just hope I can stick around the sport for the next 20 years commentating again.
Yeah, that was a great point you made. I haven't really thought of it, about getting better at it in the process if you have to lose at the expense of losing. It made me think of, you know, golf legend Tiger Woods fixing his swing when he realized, look, I have to take short-term losses to get better in the long term. And, you know, Sinner's process-oriented mind coming from, you know, the neck up, as you said. How about the fact, Robbie, that he beats Novak Djokovic, and we'll get into that match specifically in a second, but that's the classic letdown spot. Like, he realized, and he was down two sets, where, look, the job's not done yet. There's still another match to win. He didn't want to go down as just someone that beats Djokovic in a major without hoisting the trophy. So I was thoroughly impressed. And I also look at the long-term outlet, as you said. What he's done with his game, Robbie, it's like, where are the weaknesses? He is strong in just about every area, and it's not just being weakness of Jason. He's got real strengths just about everywhere you look on the tennis court.
I mean, you bang on. And, you know, I make the comparison between him and Felix Auger because I think Felix hasn't evolved enough with his game. I think his net game, the ability to come forward, recognize when he's hit good shots, and I don't think he's capitalizing enough on the good shots that he plays from the back of the court. His transition game is not nearly as good as Yannick's. And I look at where Felix was, say, 3 years ago, you know, getting to the semis of a Masters 1000 when he was 18 or 19 in Miami. Sinner was pretty close to doing the same. But then, you know, all hype was on Felix, and we were wondering where Sinner was. But now, you know, especially in the last 18 months, as you said, what happens when you're working on something, you're working on it, it's like when you're dropping the old dye in the red bowl of water. The first couple of times it doesn't start to change, looks just the same, and then suddenly you get to a tipping point.
Yeah.
And we saw that tipping point at the tail end of last year, you know, when he started to play so well indoors, and I'm talking about Yannick here, and then obviously he beats Novak two out of the three times he plays him, and then it was like, okay, suddenly everything comes together, and it comes together quickly.
Yeah.
Now, when you don't work on your game enough, you don't evolve enough as a player, I think you get what's happening to Felix right now. And for me, looking back at the last 3 years, he's stagnated. Mm-hmm. You know, the serve issues, that's not settled, the transition game. So for me, it's a nice case study when you have that growth mindset and you're prepared to lose but still work on development. It's hard, man. It's hard because you're winning a lot as it is. It's like, well, do I want to give up a couple of hundred grand there to work on something? No, but you're going to sign a deal with Nike for reportedly 158 million bucks if you're Yannick Sinner, right? And you've got all things going in the right direction.
Wow, that's a report, 158. I got to look into that. Wow. pays to be the top. But yeah, it's a brutally tough sport in the sense of winning and competing at the high level. The margins are so thin, as we know. But yeah, Sinner, and you mentioned it, like, you never know when it's all going to come together if you work on your game, but it's that 1% here, 1% there, and suddenly it comes together and he's a major champion. That final, Robbie, against Daniil Medvedev, I mean, that was an exceptional match. And I don't want to look at this in hindsight as a Medvedev two sets to love collapse, because you can talk about the man that played 24 hours on court and also showed a lot of mettle in how he played that match. Those first two sets, he changed up his game style to completely be a player that could last with the wounded animal sense, his legs not being there. So I don't look at it more as a collapse and maybe the sense of, you know, losing two sets, Robbie. I think that was a player that ran out of steam and did all he could to compete, but best of five just wasn't enough.
Yeah, you're so right. Let's not forget the previous run against Zverev, right? Down two sets to love in a world of hurt. Zverev looked like he was going to beat him in straight sets, but he just hung on in there. And I think the effect of that, Rusevori, don't forget Rusevori early on in the tournament, right?
Yeah.
Finishing at 3:40 a.m. That was a second round match, wasn't it? So you're bang on. It's definitely not a match that he'll look back on like the Nadal match when he had Nadal, you know, two sets to love up. He was fresh. He had him. What was that scoreline? 2-3, love 40. Everybody's taken a picture of that scoreline, haven't they, back in the day? We was all over him. And that, for me, was, you know, he got a lot more tighter in that match. No question about it. He was outplayed in the final here. Sinner got incrementally better as that third set started to wear on. And then I think, you know, from about midway through that fourth set, Sinner was the better player. And as you say, just the way he plays eventually caught up with him. The fact that he was trying to come in, keep the points nice and short when he won. I can tell you, I was around the green room when the finals was going on and everybody's heads were shaking. Like, how is Medvedev doing this with the amount of tennis that he's played? I think everybody to a man thought that Sinner was going to win in straight sets. So I'm a massive fan of the guy, fan of Medvedev. I think, as Jim Courier was saying, the greatest interview, certainly post-match in our sport. The guy gives you everything. He speaks from his heart. He's articulate. And if you can't like him, you're bloody tough to please, man.
Yeah, Jim told me those same things. I was like, it makes sense because they both have dry senses of humor, so it makes sense that they'd be fans of each other. I would also say that it's weird coming off of a guy, and I know the major final record is down to 1-5, but he's played great players. They're all in context. I came away more impressed with Medvedev in a weird way after this final match, what he was able to do. And Robbie, he's still a tough out everywhere. So that's the one thing I'd say is Medvedev at 27, positive outlook, handling this loss better than just about anyone would. And he remains on any surface, even on clay, even though he sandbags a little bit, he's still a tough out in every tournament he plays.
He's a Masters 1000 winner on clay at Rome. I mean, it's not like it was at Madrid where it's got a little asterisk because of the altitude there. Yep. So, bang on there. But it's interesting the philosophy that he's had for the 2024 season. You know, he said he's going to be less spiky with fans and umpires, and he just needs to focus better on court. And I think he did that with considerable aplomb. I think you walk away from a major like this knowing that you did everything possible in your power, that you gave blood, sweat, and tears. As Chris Martin would have said, you got to bleed yourself dry. And I think that's what he did. He bled himself dry to try and get the win. And it's going to be fascinating because he mentioned in his post-match speech, didn't he? Interview, where he said he doesn't know how it's going to play out because after he lost to Rafa, he had the worst season of his career. I don't think that's going to be the case this year. I thought he played a good final, no choking going on there. Anybody who suggests that, I think, just doesn't understand the sport.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
More with Robbie Koenig here on Tennis Channel Inside. And it was a great run by Medvedev to get to the final. Sinner wins the title, and he beat Novak Djokovic, the king in Australia, a 10-time champion there. Beat him in four sets in the semifinal. From the Djokovic perspective, and you've gone on record as saying it was startling to see his level, or lack thereof, in this match, given what we've expected from how great, how all-time great this guy is. So I guess starting the discussion off here, Robbie, looking at what happened from Djokovic's side, do you just contribute this to a bad day? Do you contribute this to maybe, you know, look, he is a 36-year-old guy, and he's not going to be as spry as he once was. Was it the conditions? Where do we look at a couple days after of Djokovic's level in that semifinal loss?
Mitch, I'm not sure he was playing that well the whole tournament, let alone just that match. I mean, you know, against Dino Prismic in the first round, 4 hours and 10 minutes, I think it was, against the young 18-year-old, you know, gave him a good nudge, no question about that. He's a good player. But, you know, even then a lot of us were like, wow, that's unusual for a first round match. And I just don't think he looked dialed in. The backhand in particular, the backhand was like shocking against Sinner, how many he missed, like routine backhands. The serve wasn't the usual self, the accuracy. So, you know, he said he's trying to shake off a bit of flu early on in the tournament. So, you know, all those things affect you. And, you know, I can't think of a match where he played and we were thinking, wow, you know, Novak is back now. He's back to playing his best. It's the second week of the major.
Right.
No. And then, I mean, I think we were all shocked when he loses the first two sets the way he does. I mean, the fact that he's still got to the semis of a major.
Yeah.
And he's put himself in contention. And, you know, you almost feel like he's playing at a 6.8 on the Dave Portnoy scale.
Yeah.
You know, that's scary for how well you still have to play in order to beat him. But of course, for Sinner now, the fact that Sinner's beaten him again in such a short time frame, the belief that it gives Yannick, irrespective of how Novak's playing, you've got to think what it does for Yannick,
right?
Is it's invaluable, right? To do it over to five sets. I think that's what's going to help Sinner so much when they play, you know, this year again, which I'm sure they will do.
He'd beaten him a few times, but winning that in a best of five was the only doubt that might have been there. Like, can I do it here? And he proved it, and the sky's the limit there. Yeah, Djokovic not having a single break point in that match. We're watching it like this is, and it's still finding a way to win one set. He is, Robbie, a victim of standards, similar to, you know, how Federer was when Djokovic came up, like that I created a monster quote where, look, you're expected to win every tournament you're in, which is just insane, but that's the level we expect. I'm not writing him off. You had the quote that said he'll retire when he stops winning slams. Like, I understand that. But when you get to a certain point age-wise, these bad days tend to happen a little more often than they did when you were in your late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah, they do. When you've been, I mean, I think we'll only see where that tipping point is in hindsight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody wants to be the first, right?
That's the
culture that we live in right now. I called it first. I was the one who picked Sinner to win the Australian Open. And, you know, Djokovic was never going to be the same.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I'm not going to write that guy off. No chance. I mean, the guy won four of the five biggest tournaments last year, you know, three majors plus the ATP finals. He did pretty well in Wimbledon, right? He should have won that too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it'll be fascinating in hindsight. Mm-hmm. But I tell you what, that guy's so motivated. Who's going to beat him on a grass court? Right?
Yeah.
Who's going to beat him on a grass court? Sinner's going to have to play pretty well on the grass to beat him. Alcaraz is going to have to play lights out again, and like he did in the final. And he still should have lost that final. So, you know, I think he's going to be extremely tough to beat at Wimbledon, US Open. You know, he's going to be in the mix again. And the French, Nadal, so many questions about Rafa. I'm picking Novak for at least two majors this year.
Oh, there it is. It's that one swinging volley that's changed everything. I would say Wimbledon. It's funny, of all the majors, it's the one he didn't win last year. I feel most confident in Wimbledon. I think we're in a great place with tennis, and I'm just curious to see what Novak's schedule looks like. He's gotten to that age, that late 30s, where he's going to prioritize health, rounding up for the majors. How much tennis does he play, and what events is really the only thing I'm looking at over the next couple months.
Yeah, and he's been a master of that, hasn't he, Mitch? So he'll know exactly how he's feeling. And, of course, if he feels like he does need an additional tournament in his schedule. He's no problem getting wild cards there. So to be able to fine tune, you know what it's like when you've done a podcast a couple of times. The first one's always difficult. When you're on to your 100th one, you know exactly how it works out, right?
Blends together a little bit. Yeah, a little bit. It's I try to be the Novak Djokovic of podcasting when I can. High standards. Yes, before we get to the women, I did want to mention one other thing. The other semifinalist, Alex Zverev, and I know there's a lot going on the serious side, the cloud going on after. We respect all that and the process that's going out there. But on the tennis side, the one note I had is, Robbie, it's great that he's back at this level for his sake and getting to a semifinal, but that match against Medvedev, it's another match where he loses to the same guy and another match where he looked like the better player for most of it. So how much do you think that's, it's a great run. He beats Alcaraz, he gets to the semi, but he just can't shake this guy. And it has to be infuriating when you've been the better player for most of these matches.
Of course it does. I mean, the mental scoring down the road, that's where it comes into play. Every single time he wants to win one of these things, and he's so desperate to win one of them. That's what I wanted to see. I wanted to see Sinner take on Zverev with so much on the line. You know, Zverev would have had more gas in the tank had he beaten Medi in straight sets, which he should have done. That's the final I actually wanted to see. Two guys who haven't won before. Similar when Zverev was playing Dominic Thiem, right? To see them both getting tight, how they were going to handle the situation.
That was the tightest tiebreak of all. Like that fifth set tiebreak, watch that. It didn't. You wouldn't, if you didn't know it's pro tennis, you would not think these are two guys playing for men's major final.
Exactly. So, that's what I wanted to see play out. But, Sinner, under the pump against Medvedev, showed, that he knows how to handle the big moments. And I think, what did he say? He likes to dance in the storm of pressure.
It was perfect.
Which it tells us that he wants to be in those big moments. And I think if you've got that mindset, that's the mindset, getting back to Zverev, that he needs to adopt, needs to feel comfortable in. And it's not easy when you keep coming across this guy Medvedev, because when you don't get the win, man, you know what it's like in a one-on-one sport. You start to even dread seeing that person on the same side of your draw.
Right.
And that can affect you getting to even playing against them. So, but there were so many good signs about how well he was playing up until that moment. I think he's just got to keep reminding himself. It's applying the finishing touches. And I think what's crucial for me is that the improvements that need to be made are not technical. Don't have to worry about the serve, the forehand or whatever. It's definitely, for me, between the ears. And that's where the improvement needs to take place. And I don't know how much work he's doing in that department. Whether he's as dialed in as someone like Novak is, but that's the improvement. Forget about forehands and serves. You don't need to hit any more reps. That is not the problem.
You beat a guy like Alcaraz, and it's not a fluke. You're the better player. It shows you all you need to know about your game. So I agree with you completely there. Figuring out the mental side of tennis is the battle that every tennis player wages with themselves, and some prevail, some don't. On to the women now. Robbie Koenig here on Tennis Channel Inside In. Irina Sabalenka goes back-to-back. She repeats as champ and does it flawlessly. This is someone that their mental side, speaking of that, had been often criticized and critiqued, and some for obvious and deserved reasons. Look at what she's done the last 2 years in majors. There hasn't been a player on the women's side, surely, other than Novak on the men's side, that's been as consistent as Irina Sabalenka. She goes back-to-back, does not drop a set, and there is comfort in playing where you've won before. She played beautiful tennis. She played, dare I say, a little smarter tennis, and she's now a two-time major champion.
You talk about personal accountability, right? It goes back to that discussion she had with their coach. I can't even remember if it was 2020. It was 2022, wasn't it, with Anton Dubrov in Dubai, when she was serving all the double faults, and he was struggling to help her, and he said to her, "Irina, I can't help you anymore. You need to get another coach. I've tried everything I know, and it's not helping you. I'm prepared to walk away for your benefit." And she comes back to him and says, "No, the problem is not you. The problem is me. And we are going to work this thing out together, and you're going to be part of that process." And man, for me, I get goosebumps just thinking about it, Mitch?
Yeah.
Because so often how we see players always blaming somebody else rather than taking that responsibility upon themselves. And you talk about a good example, and that's the perfect example for me. She's figured it out. The serve is as good as it's ever been. that the mentality is as good as it's ever been. She believes that she can win these things. And boy, she was is a great quote that Richard Evans wrote about, it was Rod Laver when Rod was playing at his peak. He was like a king sweeping the squatters out of his castle. And that's what she did on the woman's side of the draw. I mean, she was so dominant.
You know, when I saw her, the warm-up videos, drawing on her coach's head, kicking the water bottle, really giving that guy a hard time, by the way. But when I saw those videos of her just being so bubbly and loose, it made me think about an old adage I learned, that everybody warms up differently, that there are players that have to be serious, the Rafa serious mentality. But some players, and it's all about what your personality is, she needed to kind of be loose. She needed not to be wound up so tight. Because when she gets on the court, she's a killer. Like, there is no denying her competitive hunger. But it just showed me that, and it showed me how, look, she is clearly, like, she's going to be gunning for number one. Iga had a letdown here. Sabalenka's in it for the long haul, and now that she's in that double major club, I don't expect this to slow down at all in the near future.
No way. You're bang on. And you're so right about what works for you. And I think that's a great message to coaches out there, that every single player is different. Even when you're coaching in a team environment, you know, my son is part of, you know, the Baylor tennis team, right? And the way that one coach, one player trains might be different. And the fitness stuff that he has to do is different. And the way he needs to be spoken to is different, because you're dealing with six very different personalities. And it's the same when you look across the top 100 in the rankings. Everyone's slightly different, Mitch, and they have found the formula. Jason Stacey's the butt of a lot of the stuff that goes on there, but you know, he understands his role. I'm sure there's a serious side as well. I think he comes from like a UFC background. This Jason, he's into his taekwondo and all that kind of stuff, and he is one fierce-looking guy. So there's definitely a serious side there. But they just get the blend so nice. Oh, that's what I was thinking of as well. That speech after she lost to Rybakina in Brisbane.
Oh, yeah.
When she was like, whoa, what was that, Arena? You know, you just open up a can of whoop-ass here on me. And, three games is all I was allowed to get. Yeah. Please don't play that well sort of when you come to Australia. So she just gets it, man. Your ability to deflect that pressure away, bang on.
It's perfect. And she's really coming into her own at this point, which is exceptional. For the other finalists, I want to mention her, Chin Wen Zheng, Chinese woman, gets to the final. You know, the road wasn't as tough, no top 50 players, but she's living up to her potential too. And like we talked about last week on the show, ahead of schedule for her age, and now at number 7 in the rankings, a bona fide top 10 player. The run didn't end well, but this is one where you look back on as the quote-unquote major breakthrough. This is only going to propel her for future success. And I know it's a bad taste in your mouth losing here, but just getting to the final and getting this experience is, Robbie, as you said before, invaluable to her development and her aspirations.
It is. Absolutely. And Mitch, hey, RK's outside pick to win it. RK's outside pick.
I had heard that, yeah.
So I was so happy to see her go deep. I've been a big fan of hers since, I'd say, beginning of last year. I thought she was going to do well at both Wimbledon and the US Open. Didn't quite pan out. I'm just going to, you know what, if I keep picking her, she's eventually going to come good. And she came good for me and us, so sooner rather than later. Again, I just love the way she carries herself, right? She's a fearlessness about her. I love the fact that she's got Pierre Riba in her camp, who I think is an excellent coach. Clearly didn't want to play second fiddle to Brad or anybody else in Coco's camp, and was happy to go back with a player that he'd worked with before, and it's paid off straight away. So big props to them. It seems like they've got a nice team around her, and she's going to be knocking on the door, man, a lot. And she's got great personality, such a big market as well, the Chinese market. So 10 years since Lino ended up winning there. Fantastic for the sport. You know, the women's game is in a good place. Of course, from American perspective, you've got Coco. So you've got some big countries, big characters, different characters.
Right.
You know, and I think that makes for a good recipe.
Certainly does. Lina showing up, giving, Chin Wen a proper hello greeting as well, which was nice to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, it, you know, it's, and then you have four majors to pick her to win. So every year you got four chances. So that's always good. The American side too, you mentioned like what Coco Gauff loses to Sabalenka in the semis in a rematch that US Open final gives her her toughest match by far. She's up to number three, and how she's processing really, Robbie, when I look at it, like how she processes these minor or major setbacks just shows you the growth and maturity there. And I was thinking back to our last convo after Wimbledon, first round exit, where's her forehand? Where's her game? What's going on? She's rounding into the third best player in the world and someone that we're just going to expect and deservedly so to be in these second week of slams consistently.
And the similar growth mindset to what we're talking about with Jannik Sinner, right? It's like, okay, I'll go away and figure out what I can do better, what I can do differently. And she's done that. And you just get the feeling that she's never satisfied with what she's got. I get the feeling she does enjoy the victories along the way, but man, she just, she's got a bigger goal in mind. And I think with that growth mindset, she's only going to get better and better if she can just continue to look to come forward a little bit more. And she already volleys pretty well. You know, she plays a lot of dubs. Man, when her and Jess have played together, they've done so well. So I think that's going to be easy for, you know, whoever steps into that coaching role on a full-time basis. I mean, you just get the feeling she is so coachable, like a Sinner is, like an Alcaraz is. So what a pleasure. And already immense maturity at such a young age. Again, she's got herself surrounded, these, you know, good management group with Tony and Alessandro and everybody from teammate there. So, you know, the money side of things taken care of. So, you know, I just hope they invest that wisely in whoever they bring on board in a permanent role there alongside Brad.
Wrapping up here with Robbie Koenig on Tennis Channel Insight, and I had two more topics from the 2024 Australian Open to get to. One, I'm not going to forget it. I'd be remiss if I did. Got to talk about Rohan Bopanha winning the doubles championship, getting the number one, and doing it at 43 years old. I don't know if, you know, that makes you maybe think about, hey, I might be able to come out of retirement and with all these old guys coming through. But what a great story, and what an example of persistence in a game that could have so many highs and lows for Bopanha to do this and get these firsts at 43 years of age, winning with Matt Ebden. Just an inspiring story from a guy who paid his dues and did it the right way.
He did. I mean, he certainly paid his dues. I know Ops was around when I was just finishing up playing dubs. And I mean, he tells a story a couple of years ago. I think it was 5 years ago. He was thinking about quitting, right? His child had just come along. You know, the ranking was dropping. He was struggling to get into tournaments. And, you know, his wife encouraged him to stay out there and keep on playing. And you never know what can happen. Persistence is the most underrated talent that you can have. And of course, you got to find the right partner. And I think Matt compliments Bops so well. He is just solid all around. He is rock solid all around. And that gives Rohan the ability just to swing from the hip, especially when he's returning. The serve is world-class, always has been. And of course, as you get wiser and older, you know how to play the game better. So often it's the body that lets you down, right? But the fact it's dubs and you can get away with the body not having to be in pristine condition, just good enough condition. And that's where Bob says, he's spoken about the fact that, you know, he's discovered yoga and that's been a big part of him being able to stay out on tour as long as he has been now. And he's making bank, man. You know, when you're making $1 million, I think he made 1.1 million last year. It's a lot of money, Mitch, especially at the tail end of your career. And then you start the next year by winning a major. I mean, there's a lot of players that, you know, in the early 30s that would sign up for that, let alone 43.
Well, it's a special time. I mean, it's awesome that he was able to do this. It puts a bow along with Sinner and Sabalenka winning on an Australian Open. And I'll say, Robbie, I mean, it was a great fortnight. You had a lot of moments. Was there anything else that stood out, you know, outside or some of the matches you called, things you got to see, witness from your perspective?
Yeah, there was. There's one thing I definitely want to touch on, and that was Sinner thanking his parents after he won the title in that trophy ceremony. And there was a lot of it on social media when he said, you know, I've got the best parents at the age of 14. They trusted me to go out and make those decisions that I wanted to be a tennis pro, move to Bordighera with Riccardo Piatti. and try and develop my tennis from there. And that's a fascinating discussion there. Of course, that is the best case scenario when it does work out. But I would almost argue, Mitch, that there are way more examples of kids, and especially at that age, where the parents have been really pushy in order to get to the desired goal. Because I don't believe that most 14-year-olds have that maturity that Yannick had, that have the discipline. And I think for the most part, kids at that age need a bit of a nudge. And sometimes it's more than a bit of a nudge, especially in our sport where the skill level is so high, the physical level is so high, the mental level is so high. So I look at Yannick's statement as very much the outlier. And prior to that discussion that we were just having earlier, I think there's many different ways of doing it.
Yeah.
You know, you can come from rich backgrounds, you can come from poor backgrounds, you can come from parents that aren't involved much in the sport at all. Djokovic's parents, there's no tennis history there. There's not much of a tennis history in the Sinner family either. But you can have very pushy parents as well that, you know, want to see the best for you and push you hard because you don't know what discipline is at 14. And that works too. So when there's a lot of coaches out there saying, listen to what Yannick says, got to be careful because it's certainly not the only way. And in my experience, it's the road that is less traveled. And I think it's harder to do it. And, you know, I think Yannick was very fortunate that the guy that was his mentor at the age of 14 was Riccardo Piatti, somebody who had walked that road on numerous occasions. It developed players like Cristiano Carratti, Lorenzo Ferlin. You know, he got Ivan Ljubicic at a very young age. So he had is so much experience. He'd coached Novak Djokovic. Yep. He'd worked with Mira Sharapova. And I mean, this is the guy that's going to mentor you when you leave your parents. Mm-hmm. I mean, you talk about best case scenario.
Yeah.
So, you know, we could sit around a table and throw that idea around for a good 45 minutes at least. But I thought it was very interesting what he said. And you talk about being a credit to your parents. My gosh, Yannick is just that. But there's definitely many different sides to that discussion.
We could do an hour podcast just on that discussion. It's a very, you know, very detailed, nuanced piece. I agree with you that it is the road less traveled. A lot of children need to be nudged and need to be pushed in the right direction. There is the counter of don't push too hard or they're going to rebel. We've seen examples of parents that kind of do that in sports and then the kids don't stick with it. There is no one way to, as the old phrase goes, skin a cat. There is definitely a road less traveled. Sinner's case worked in Sinner's case because he had that motivation and he had top-notch parents that he's obviously making proud every day. But it was a nuanced thing. And yeah, I think the lesson to it, Robbie, is generalities, speaking in that way, don't always work. So you can't just take one person's story and apply it to everyone else. But you know, it's a good jumping off point.
Yeah. No, thanks much.
I appreciate
that. Fantastic.
Yeah. And I just wanted to also say, I mean, I wanted to get it out there on the record. You've been doing this for, you know, more years than you care to admit. I don't think you've lost your fastball yet. So there's still a lot.
Hey, me and Kenny Powers, man.
Yeah. What a show. Eastbound and down reference. I feel like we could just go off on that. But the last point of this whole thing is now we're into February. You know, it's the only time in the tennis calendar, no Masters events and no slams. But this is where you put the work in, right? As a pro tennis player, the people, the guys and girls that win these big titles are putting in the hard yards in February. So it might seem like it's not an important time, but rest assured, the champions out there are grinding.
Hey, man, I tell you, Yannick Sinner was out there on the treadmill. I don't know if you saw that on social media today. He was out there on the treadmill and in the gym putting in some work. So when the guy who's just won a major is doing that, everybody else take note.
Yeah, I got congratulated by the Pope, their prime minister. He's feeling the glow up there. So Robbie Koenig, always a pleasure. And the last thing is, have you stopped finally finished celebrating the South African Rugby World Cup yet? Are you still in your victory parade?
No, that lasts for about 12 months, MM. So it's starting to wane, but it's definitely not forgotten. Plenty of Springbok shirts being worn around town.
Beating the All Blacks. You got to celebrate it. New Zealand going down. Robbie Koenig, always a pleasure. You're one of the best broadcasters in the game. I'm not just saying that because you're on this show. Always generous with your time. Really appreciate it. You're always welcome. Thanks for coming on Tennis Channel Inside In.
Thanks for having me, Mitch.
That was Robbie Koenig on Tennis Channel Inside In. We're on the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. Go to tennis.com/podcast. Find us on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever podcasts are, and watch the videos on YouTube. Just search Tennis Channel Inside In. It'll pop right up. You can subscribe, leave a rating, automatically get these episodes downloaded to your phone or listening device. It's that simple. We're back next week, February tennis, a lot of tournaments to discuss, a lot of storylines, and some special guest interviews as well. So you're not going to want to miss that. For Robbie Koenig, my name is Mitch Michaels. Thank you for listening to Tennis Channel Inside In, and I'll talk to you next week.